Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual with our Sunday morning show. And we should have a very interesting show today. We have a man with opinions as our guest today, an old friend of mine, and one of Chicago's and one of the country's top sports writers, Rick Talley of the Chicago Tribune. And we have many, many things to talk about. I'd like to remind you that there's a lot of action at Sox Park today. You can get out and see Texas. They're making a late run at the championship of their division. I don't think that they're going to make it. That is Texas. Kansas City looks now like they're a shoe-in. And at the same time, you can listen to Jack on television and the radio boys on GN, because the Cubs will be playing a doubleheader at San Francisco, and they have a tough day ahead of them because Vida Blue is going to pitch one, and he is 14-4. And really one of the outstanding pitchers in baseball and one of the nicest guys in baseball. So whatever you do, have a nice day. And we'll be back here now with our guest Rick Talley of the Chicago Tribune in just a moment. We're delighted to have Rick Talley as a guest today. Rick and I are old friends. We've been on the beat together for many, many years, and he does a lot of work for GN, a station that I was with starting in 1930 and was with for many, many years, and did the Cubs and the White Sox on that station. Rick, your column the other day dealt with a man who was one of those seemingly irresponsible baseball owners, Mr. Steinbrenner of the New York Yankees. And as you look ahead to baseball, they're going to have a record year attendance-wise. What do you foresee in the few years ahead? For example, Calvin Griffith told me the other day, a couple of Cubs are going to have to go broke before they stop all this high-priced nonsense.
Well, I think Griffith may be on the right track, because you can't, unless they can come up with some rules within baseball to legislate against how fools spend their own money, they are going to go broke, because what's happened is created a bad system. There's no reason a 260 hitter can be making $500,000, $600,000 a year, and it's happening all over the place. All you have to do is look in the Tribune when they run that Millionaires Club, and you see all the non-producers making all the money, and the system is up for grabs. But when you've got Ray Kroc, who has more money than he knows what to do with, and Corbett from Texas, and Gene Autry, and the fool in New York, Steinbrenner, there's nothing you can do to say, hey, look, this is wrong, because they don't care. They don't know how to. They knew how to make hamburgers and build boats, but they know nothing about baseball, so the logic is not going to apply.
I was always in love with the first commissioner of baseball, Judge Landis, as a remarkable man, and I wondered if he'd been alive today during these turbulent years, whether the same thing would have happened.
Well, of course, I can't answer that, Bob, because you're much older than I am, and I wasn't around then.
Well, Bowie Kuhn, the present commissioner, seems to have no control over this sort of thing.
No, you're right. He seems to take a different attitude toward his job than Landis did. I don't know. Bowie is more like a corporation lawyer, and he acts like a corporation lawyer, but he seems to be a servant of management. And unfortunately, Landis, from what I've read about him, from what I've heard people talk about him, at least did have the game and the betterment of the game in mind. But Kuhn, I don't think really understands the concept.
I agree. And I've always maintained that had Landis been commissioner, that Steinbrenner and Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson would have been up at 300 North Michigan Avenue, and they would have had the law laid down to them. And Steinbrenner would have had it laid down in no uncertain terms. Landis was a no-nonsense guy.
Well, apparently he was. Nowadays, every time you lay a rule on a ball player or even an owner, the next thing you hear from is his attorney. Maybe Landis might not have been able to be quite as tough today as he was in those days, because everybody takes everything to court. As soon as you say this is against the rule, the guy says, well, you're violating my rights and I'm going to sue. So Landis might not have quite been able to be as arbitrary as he was, but I still think he could have made a difference.
Well, the role of the commissioner came out in the Finley cases that went to court, and where judges agreed that he did have authority that wasn't down in writing.
Well, I thought Charlie Finley got a raw deal in this when he was not able to sell his own ball players, when he knew he was going to lose them to the free agent system. I don't know where the judge got his precedent, but I think Finley got a pretty raw deal. And I think, like Finley or not, and like the kind of person he is, and I don't like the way he uses people and the way he's managed his own ball clubs, nevertheless, he's a very astute baseball man, and he has shown that, and I really think it would be unfortunate. I would have talked differently 3 or 4 years ago. I think it'd be unfortunate if Charlie Finley got forced out of baseball now, because as the pendulum comes around, here's a guy we once thought was a fool, turns out to be a lot more sensible than some of the guys with a lot of money.
You're absolutely right. I give him credit. I give him credit for it.
He's sneaky.
When it came to putting a ball club together, he deserves a lot of credit.
But, I mean, let's face it. You're telling me that if I develop a ball player and I've got a ball player like Vida Blue, I can't turn around and sell him for $1 million? If that's not violating my rights, I don't know what is. But now they went to court, and he wasn't allowed to do that. And I thought it was a bad deal because you know Vida Blue was going to walk away, and the other players were going to walk away.
Well, now what do you visualize happening, let's say, with the Cubs north side and the White Sox south side? Do they figure in Billy Martin's future?
Oh, I don't know. Somebody's going to hire Billy Martin. You know that. Somebody's going to hire Billy Martin, and if his liver holds out, he's going to manage around baseball for a long time. But I would be more apt to think that Bill Veeck would hire Billy Martin to come to the White Sox next year than anything else. I don't think Bill Wrigley and Bob Kennedy would quite consider Billy Martin their type of manager.
Do you agree with your co-worker, Mr. Israel, that Frank should be fired and Martin should be hired?
That's the silliest thing I've read in years. I think that David Israel, being new in town, probably wanted to attract some attention, and perhaps the other reason was that Herman won't talk to him anymore because David wrote a column about Jose Cardinal that was full of misstatements and erroneous facts, and Herman just said, well, why fool with a sports writer that can't get it straight? Now David then turns around and says Herman should be fired. So that's between those two fellows. As far as I was concerned, the article, and it appeared in the Tribune, Dave's a columnist like I am, and I know a lot of people have felt the same way about things I've written. But this particular article, I thought, did a great disservice not only to Frank's, but to the guy that wrote it. Because it just showed that he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Now, the Cubs made a big investment in Dave Kingman. Kingman, at the times that I've seen him, looks like a better outfielder and got a better arm than I thought he had. Not bad at all, and if he could just hit a few balls and keep it up. You think they made a good investment?
From a business standpoint, yes, because the Cubs are in a holding pattern right now. Quite frankly, the Cubs never expected to even be this close last year or this year. They brought in Bob Kennedy to try to build up a farm system, which they had let go down the wayside. They tried to build up a system, develop their scouting system, and try to develop young ballplayers, which the Cubs have not been doing for the last decade or 2 decades. They haven't developed their own talent. But in the meantime, you've got to play baseball. So he's brought in trades. He made the Onoveras, Mercer, DeJesus, Buckner trades. He acquired Kingman to try to do something to keep the ball club interesting and bring people to the ballpark. But I don't think they ever dreamed that this club they have now could meld into a championship contender. I think it's merely a holding action. And for that purpose, I think Kingman serves it well because he is the threat of the long ball. And people, there is a star system in baseball, and people do like to come out and see a star. I personally, the guy strikes out more than I like to see a ball player strike out. If he wasn't hurt and played regularly every day, he would break all existing major league records for strikeouts. Bobby Bonds happens to hold the record, incidentally. It's 180-some. Just like we had the two biggest whiff artists in town at the same time.
Bobby Bonds had some homecoming here Friday night. Remember? He had 2 home runs?
That's right, he did. Well, it's about time. I mean, I'm happy for him if he's going to make all that money. I'm happy for any of these ball players that make all that money. That doesn't mean I think they deserve it.
Well, I agree with you. Some of these salaries are just don't make any sense at all.
Kingman, back to Kingman. Now, I think the Cubs hired him for like $200,000 a year. On today's market, I mean, that's more than you or I make, but in today's market, that's not exorbitant when you consider that Mercer makes probably $300,000 a year, and he's got 5 home runs and 30-some runs batted in and is hitting .265. So I suppose that it was a good investment on the Cubs' part, and who knows? Kingman does have that one unknown quality. You know, he could maybe open his eyes one of these days, time his lunge, and start hitting home runs again. That's what they say about me on a golf course. He's timing his lunge again, you know. But, you know, here's a guy that had 30-some home runs a couple of years ago with the Mets before he broke his thumb. He was on the way to maybe breaking Babe Ruth's record.
Let's take the situation as it is today, and let's look ahead to next year. Which club in Chicago would you say has the brightest future, the Cubs or the White Sox?
Well, if you're talking about winning a pennant?
Getting someplace.
Oh, the Cubs, no question about it. The White Sox have no future at all with the present cast, except they do have some young players that show some potential that they brought up from the minor leagues. I like their catcher, the new catcher, Colburn, and I don't know how consistent the center fielder is going to be, but Tom Spencer has shown quite a bit. But I think overall the Cubs have a brighter future, yes.
Now, a recent date, a couple of things have popped up that make their future look bright. That's the pitching of Kruko and Lamp. Now, Friday night, Lamp pitched a shutout, although he was in a world of trouble against the Giants.
And Kruko found himself apparently in Wichita. That's the one area where the Cubs have developed players, and that's pitching. The criticism is that they haven't developed any other ball players in their farm system. For example, I'll ask you a question. When's the last outfielder come up in the Cubs farm system? Do you know?
No, I don't offhand.
I think there are three in the major leagues, Lou Brock, Oscar Gamble, and Joe Wallace. Now, the last infielder, as far as I know, that made it anywhere, that came up through the Cubs organization was, Kessinger, and then I think Metzger. But now, everybody else on the Cubs ball club came from some other organization. And it's been that way for years, that they haven't been able to develop their own players. And I just don't think a pennant can be won by trying to buy players from other people. History has shown it can't be done. Tom Yawkey, certainly you can go back the years with the Red Sox. He was not able to do it.
Well, that's really one of the inequities and unfair things about baseball. How can a fellow like, let's say, Bill Veeck, who works hard at it, who doesn't have the checkbook, he can't compete with Steinbrenner and Corbett and Turner and the rest of these people, what does he do? I would think that baseball owners themselves would be concerned. The top flight stars go with the people that have the checkbooks. There's something wrong about that.
Well, there's no question about that, but the problem is that you're talking about 20-some men. Many of them have a lot more money than others, and when you have a lot of money, sometimes you have this feeling of power, and they really don't know what they're doing. But they have no unification about it. If they could all sit down, they can't even have a meeting and vote on a designated hitter rule. How in the world are they going to stop this salary problem? You've got two leagues, and one of them plays with a designated hitter, and one of them does it. One of them has his umpire squatting one way, one of them has the umpire squatting the other. One of them calls a low strike, one of them doesn't call a low strike. This is baseball. Baseball has never been unified, and now you're going to ask me why they can't get together and decide how to stop the salary. The only thing that's going to stop it is, as your man from Minnesota said, if somebody goes belly up. The problem there's always another fool who made a couple of $1 million building shopping centers who's going to come along and buy that club, and he's going to make the same mistakes over again.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is Rick Talley, one of the outstanding sports writers in Chicago. He's with the Chicago Tribune, one of the country's great newspapers, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest this morning, Rick Talley of the Chicago Tribune, writes on many subjects that all have to do with sports, and he's an enthusiast in many fields. Racing happens to be one of them. Do you still own a couple of nags, by the way?
I have some part interest in a harness horse. He was a great swimmer. He was. He had a sore leg, and so we sent him to the swimming. They have a swimming pool for horses to get back into shape. And at $14 a day, he learned how to do the backstroke and the side stroke. And problem was, I couldn't find the other horses to enter him against in a swimming race. But he can't run where the whatever.
What about in the mud?
Hey, that's a thought. I never thought about that. The horse is a good swimmer, though, and now I've sent him over to Moline because he can't even qualify to race here.
Rick, some people wonder why. It dates back maybe. Were you around in the Marge Everett time?
Just at the end of Marge Everett's reign at Arlington Park. I happen to know Marge pretty well. And I think quite frankly, no matter what the opinions are of people about her and the way she operated racing here, I think she's done a fantastic job at Hollywood Park in California, and that she was a lot better for racing than a lot of other people have been that are in racing.
Some people wonder why, for example, with a $100,000 race at Arlington Park, and some pretty smart operators out there, Mr. Joyce and others, why they brought in a great horse, Aladar, and it was worth the price of admission just to see an animal like that, but why they couldn't get a field that at least was respectable to run for $100,000.
Well, because $100,000 in racing, Bob, is not really an outstanding figure anymore. There were several other races worth almost as much around the country, and if you have a horse, Batonier or some other horse that you know could win 100 or 60,000 someplace else, why bring him in and get beat by Aladar? It's just a matter of other trainers ducking Aladar. You can't really criticize the track management in this case. Aladar is a great, great thoroughbred. I mean, maybe the second best or the third best that we've seen in years since Citation. You have to put Secretariat there, but what other thoroughbred do you know that has done what these two thoroughbreds have done during the three-year-old campaign, Affirmed at Aladar?
I don't know whether you've ever done any writing for Sports Illustrated, but they've had some great stories and really great pictures on Affirmed and Aladar. Just fantastic.
Well, if you realize, these horses ran something like 8 or 9 miles against each other in the last year, and one beat the other by a length or a length and a half over 8 or 9 miles. That's the margin of victory. And I covered the Belmont. I did not go to the Derby, but I was at the Belmont, and it was just a great sports happening to see these 2 3-year-olds fight it out nose to nose for the last 6 furlongs of the Belmont. I mean, that's unheard of. And of course, I happen to think that the Cawthon, Steve Cawthon, the jockey, was worth the difference of victory. And I've had a lot of horsemen disagree with me on this, but I think if Cawthon had been riding Aladar, we might be talking about Affirm being the second best thoroughbred. That's how good Cawthon is as a jockey. I mean, you saw our Carroll, and we've both seen Shoemaker and Johnny Longdon, but nobody I've ever seen rides a horse like Steve Cawthon.
Well, your friend Dave Feldman says the same thing. This guy was really born to a horse.
Well, he's on the horse's back, and I'll never forget the first time I saw Steve Cawthon at Arlington Park. He brought in 5 straight winners one day, each of which paid $15 or more, and I bet against every one of them because none of them figured, right? And one time he came around the far turn, and I said to the guy, I said, the boy has been thrown off the horse. He said, what do you mean? I said, there is no jockey on that horse because you couldn't see him. I mean, he was lying down flat, and the horse, I don't think, knows there's a jockey up there. And no wonder he runs so fast.
Well, you're right. I don't think racing has ever seen in 1 year 2 great horses like this. And I really think, you know, the public goes for the one that finishes second. I think the public really loves Aladar.
There has been a response. I talked to John Veach, the trainer, and he says there's been a great response from the public and all over the world, from letters and postcards, people writing and saying, stay with it. Gee, what a great race and everything like that. It's almost unfair to Affirm. But the nice thing about this is that apparently, owners of both of these animals are going to race them as 4-year-olds. And we've had a trend in thoroughbred racing over the last couple of years, the last 10, 15 years. This is very unfortunate that the great horses are retired to stud at the end of their 3-year-old seasons, and the public is deprived of the star. But now we have these two horses who promise to race against each other again and again, and I really think it's going to be fun. It's like going to be Joe Louis and Billy Kahn, Graziano and Zale.
You know, Rick, as you know, there's a phrase that is overdone. It is applied in many cases to animals, human beings, and so on and so forth. And perhaps it has been overdone, and that is that someone is a legend in his own time.
Well, you are.
Well, I'm not, but Pete Rose definitely is. And I hope Pete Rose breaks DiMaggio's record. I love Joe, and he was a great personal friend of mine. But this guy is really and truly remarkable.
Well, he's probably a better hitter than DiMaggio was. Now, I know that sounds blasphemous, but when you stop and think about what a complete ball player Pete Rose is, he's probably a better... When history is looked at 50, 75 years from now, I think people are going to say that Pete Rose was a better hitter than Joe DiMaggio. He didn't hit the home runs, but what else hasn't he done? He's done everything. He's 36 years old, and he's beating out bunts on AstroTurf. That's incredible. Huh?
He won't have to wait in line to get into the Hall of Fame.
No, Pete Rose will be in the Hall of Fame. I, Now, whether he can hit in, what is it now, 42 or whatever it was, and the record is 56, who knows whether he can break that record. But I can't think of anybody in baseball more suited for this kind of an assault than Pete Rose has been, because he thrives on pressure and he thrives on competition. And, you know, like he said before a game the other day, he says, hey, I can hit this guy. I've always hit this guy. And but he also knew that he couldn't hit Carlton, and that's why he bunted. He was no dummy.
Well, we were fortunate to have Pete Rose out here at Northwest Federal a couple of years ago, and I was really impressed with him. He's a marvelous guy with all of his talent.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. But what a great, great baseball player he's been. And it was fun to have him in right field at Wrigley Field so we could throw things at him.
What is your prediction for the Bears? How much better will they be?
Well, they have to play 16 games this year, so that gives them a chance to win one or two more. I say they're going to finish maybe first, second, or third in their division, and I really can't tell you yet because you have to wait and see how the camp develops and what players are going to be healthy and what ones aren't. I'm concerned basically about their defense. Their pass rush and their linebacking is very questionable. Wayman Bryant has a bad shoulder. I don't think he'll ever play football to speak of again. And I think the new coaching staff is an improvement. I'm still not sold on the quarterback, Bob Avellini, but maybe the new coach will have sense enough to put somebody else in there.
You know, a few weeks ago, or maybe a few months ago now, Bill Veeck was commenting on the fact that the measure of publicity they got in our Chicago papers.
The Tribune. Basically, he was complaining about the Tribune.
Well, tell me this. With the attendance that they get, how come the Chicago Sting gets all the publicity they get?
I don't know. I don't know why the Chicago Sting. I guess because it's a recognized professional sports team in a major market, and our newspaper editors feel that they therefore should have a story every day. But based on the public interest, it's unwarranted space because there are a lot more things. I think pigeon racing is more popular than soccer in Chicago. What's stunk?
Well,
you don't like pigeon racing?
Well, I do. I used to when I was a kid. I had 10 or 12 or 20 pigeons. I used to fly and take them in the car and go down, let them go at Joliet, and then go a little further.
Did the Tribune write about it?
No, they didn't. But my birds always came back. They were well trained.
Well, let me ask you. What do you think about? Did you think that the Bill Veeck had a point when he claimed that he was not getting enough publicity in the Tribune?
No, I wasn't conscious of that at all.
Well, over the years now, you worked years in the broadcasting booth for the White Sox. Have you always felt that maybe in this city that the Cubs, I mean, you've heard the phrase, this is a Cub town. Have you always felt that maybe the White Sox have been treated like second-class citizens?
No, I was never conscious of that. No, I'd say that. I don't think the newspapers need my endorsement of my opinion of that, but I was never conscious of that. I think the papers try to be very fair.
One of the things that happens in baseball, and it's just the nature of our business, is that the Cubs play in the afternoon and the White Sox play at night. And we have deadlines. And one of the things that happens is that columnists like myself, Condon, Israel, other people, often perhaps will go to a Cub game in the afternoon to interview a star from another team or somebody from the Cubs, and be able to write that column and meet the deadline and get it into the paper, whereas if you go to the night game, you can't make the deadline and you're writing for a day later. And that is one of the inherent problems in playing night baseball.
Yeah.
So, but then on the other hand, you're supposed to draw more people for playing night baseball, so, you know, you take what you get.
If the Cubs had night ball, how many people do you think they'd draw a year?
2.5 to 3 million.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of Chicago's outstanding sports writers, Rick Talley of the Chicago Tribune, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest, an old friend, Rick Talley of the Chicago Tribune. Rick, does Chicago need a new stadium?
Well, the Bears need a stadium. The Bears need a place to play football. Now, the question is whether Chicago should pay for it, right? I mean, I think it'd be wonderful if George Halas would pay for it. But the question is, has apparently never crossed his mind because he keeps waiting on someone to build his ballpark for him. But I don't see any sense in the I would never move the Cubs out of Wrigley Field. I would think the White Sox, they're not going to say it because right now they've got other things in mind. They'd like to have the Bears come over there again. But the fact remains that I think the White Sox, if the right deal came along, would be tenants in a new stadium. The White Sox would move.
I cannot visualize Arthur Wirtz moving the Chicago Blackhawks because he's got a fine building, and it's probably the best-kept-up building in Chicago, the Chicago Stadium.
Well, that's nice to say, but the fact is he owns the house, he owns the parking, and he owns the concession, so why do you want to sign another deal when you've got it all? And he also owns the two ball clubs that play in it. I mean, what else does he need? He needs our signatures, and he could own us. He owns everything else in Chicago. What does he want to play in another stadium for? You know better than that. So don't tell me how he keeps up his stadium. He owns everything. He owns this place, probably.
No.
But now, have you ever thought, think of a Sunday in Chicago when the Bulls are there in the afternoon and the Blackhawks are playing at night. Now, this has happened. Maybe they draw 18,000 in the afternoon, 15,000 at night. That's 30,000 people. Average ticket, $10. How much is that? All right? He owns all the parking, $3 to $5 a car. He owns all the beer. He owns all the sandwiches. He owns everything.
You want to remember, he was smart enough to buy all that property. You know, when I was broadcasting the Cub games, they could park 100 cars. Now they can park 110.
Where? At the Cub?
At Wrigley Field. Yeah.
That's right. You have to hustle.
Well,
you've got to
give Wirtz a little credit.
Why? He probably bought it cheap.
Well, so what? It was an investment. So what?
All right, but that's what I'm saying. In answering your question, there's no need for Arthur Wirtz to participate in anything because he's got it all.
Thank you. Thank you for your opinions. A pleasure having you.
You're welcome.
Our guest this morning, outspoken Rip Talley, and he writes the same way, so be sure to enjoy his writings in the sports section of the Chicago Tribune. Have a nice day. Sox play a doubleheader today against Texas. Try to get out. Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.